Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. All right. Well, as you may know, maybe you don't, and you live under a rock, AI is exploding. A lot of people, you know, like to think about AI and its opportunities, and a lot of people like to think of AI and its threats. So often, because as humans, we like drama, we like the epic. And so we view the threats of AI often as being like Terminator, right? It's Cybernet. It's going to destroy us because it's going to overtake us and it's going to be smarter than us and all these things, which, hey, maybe is true. And then you also have the ones where, you know, the paperclip theory and this idea that AI is going to find, you know, it's going to be told to do a task and to do it the absolute most efficient way possible. And it's going to learn to do that task really well, but it's going to do it at the expense of everything else, even if that task isn't very important. And once it gets access to the internet and access to everything, it's going to, you know, use up all of the resources to create a billion, trillion, gazillion paperclips. So those are the threats, the types of threats that you kind of hear about. The ones that we don't hear about as often, but are the most real to us right now, they are happening in this moment. They've been happening for years, and they are getting exponentially worse, are the environmental impacts of AI. So first things that I want to mention, I talk about AI on the podcast a lot, and it's because it is a very present thing. And I know on this podcast, it's natural we talk about things negatively. Typically, we talk about how they relate to Collapse. I am fascinated by AI. I think it is very interesting. I am intrigued both by the opportunities and I am very concerned with the negative impacts, which are very, very many. We've talked about those at length. I just kind of want to mention that, like, though we talk about AI as being bad, I recognize that there's also a lot of good to AI. There's a lot of potential to, you know, cure diseases, cure cancer. There's all of these things that they're doing which can have a positive impact on humanity and make our lives better. And I am so grateful for those things, and I hope that those things outweigh the negative things. Beyond just the super, you know, the things that could change the world positively, AI is doing some things as far as, like, you know, helping people work more effectively. I won't lie. I find value in ChatGPT. I do. In learning, particularly learning about things that I could not learn a different way, or it would be a lot harder to learn a different way. You know, if I have a quick question and it's an awkward question and one that Google is going to struggle to give me the exact answer to, there is value in going to ChatGPT and getting a response. Now with sources and all sorts of things. So the reason I bring that up is to say it's not just, you know, overhyped entertainment. It's not just goofing around trying to get it to do silly things or producing funny images or, you know, misinformation for political purposes or videos that are creepy and weird. Those are use cases, and it's kind of what we see as, because it's flashy. And so we see it on X and we see it go viral and all those types of things. But I think that there is a reason why it's growing exponentially, because, you know, there's a lot of investment into it because there is a lot of potential with it. And you know, there are already so many good use cases with it. So that's to say that its growth, it's not, I don't think it's going to just stop. There is this sort of question of, is AI a bubble? You know, is it going to pop? there is potential for that because of just the vast amount of investment that people have put into it, that AI doesn't keep up with the money being put in as far as profit coming back out. And so that's a real problem. And then you do have issues like energy usage and constraints on energy, constraints on data and storage and all the things that are required to train new systems and all of that. So that's all to say, like, yes, there's the possibility that because of constraints, it doesn't advance to where it could. But as far as potential goes, I think people see the potential. People see the results already coming out and know that it could change the world. And so I don't see there being an end to investment in AI. And with that, of course, that means that the issues that come from AI are going to continue. So anyway, I know that was kind of long-winded, but I just want to say I don't think AI is going anywhere. I don't think it's going away. And so while we can look at the positives and appreciate the positives, for the purposes of this podcast, like, we need to look at the negative impacts that it has. And today specifically, let's talk about the environmental impacts of AI. So there's multiple types of environmental impact, things like energy usage, CO2 emissions that come from that energy usage. Water usage is a big one that people might not think about. Then there's rare earth mining that comes from it. And of course, the electronic waste as well. So we'll talk about all those different types of impact. There may be other things that I'm not considering. If there's anything glaring that comes to mind for you after we get through this podcast, please reach out to me and let me know. And maybe we can do another episode digging into what I'm missing here. Lastly, I'm going to mention in my introduction here that there are limits to the data that we have. I'm going to present a lot of numbers here today, but because A, it's growing so fast, and because B, most AI is done privately, right? Research, development, all of those things are held close to the chest. I got a quote here from Elsa Olivetti. She's a professor of material science and engineering at MIT, and she focuses on research around this very topic. She says, quote, "Full planetary costs of generative AI are closely guarded corporate secrets." They're not just giving up this information. They don't want us to know the impacts they're having on the environment. And so any numbers that they give us are likely understated. And so we have to kind of go based off of the independent research. All right. First, to kind of understand each of those individual impacts that I mentioned, let's first talk about how fast it's growing, because that growth is going to change the impacts over time. The numbers that we look at as far as the impacts so far, they may seem to you, you know, not so bad. You might be like, oh, I would have expected it to be worse. But it's important to know the growth, because the growth is going to dictate how much is used, expended, polluted, and all of that in the future. So from 2022 to 2023, investment in AI grew from $3 billion to $25 billion. So almost a 10x increase in investment and private investment in just a single year. By the way, that was just in generative AI. There's all sorts of different AI. Generative AI is the ChatGPTs, the Soras, so the image generation, the text generation, those types of things. So from $3 billion to $25 billion just in 1 year, and that was a few years ago. And then in 2024, it grew to $33 billion. So it had a bigger jump in 2022 to 2023 than it did into 2024. Many different reasons for that, right? Depending on the models that were coming out and those types of things. But the huge, huge increases in investment. And even going from 25 to 33, that's still what, like, a, you know, I don't know, 27% investment, something like that. So huge. Okay. AI overall saw $100 billion privately invested in 2024. So while that doesn't show a growth rate, it just shows the massive amount of money being put into it. So when we talk about growth of, like, data center electricity usage, I'm just using one metric here to show, again, how it's grown. It's grown 12% year over year since 2017. That's a doubling every 6 years. So data centers are prolific. They're everywhere in the world. The U.S. has a very large portion of the world's data centers. It is growing at 4 times the growth rate of all other electrical usage worldwide. So yeah, while it may be a small percentage of overall electricity usage right now, it is expected to grow a lot. So data centers right now account for 1.5% of all electricity usage. That was in 2024. This could increase to 20 to 25% by 2040 to 2050. So in just 15 to 25 years, we're going to go from 1.5% of the electricity being used for data centers to a quarter. I mean, that's a huge, a quarter of all electricity just being used to power data centers to power AI. In the US, AI data centers accounted for nearly 4% of all electricity usage in 2023. So compared to globally, which is 1.5, in the US it's 4, and that number could triple by just 2028. So in 3 years, we could go from 4% of electricity usage to 12% of electricity usage in the US being AI data centers. Vijay Gadapalli, also from MIT, says, quote, "As we move from text to video to image, these AI models are growing larger, and so is their energy impact going to grow into a pretty sizable amount of energy use." This was one thing that I had kind of thought about in regards to growth. Most, I would say, of the usage of AI and AI data centers right now is coming from text generation. The reason is because text generation is where there's real quality, right? And also the last year or so in image generation. Images have gotten really quite good. There are images that are almost indistinguishable from reality. It used to be just, you know, 18 months ago, you would see an image and like there would be glaring things that would tell you it was AI. 2 years ago, it was like so uncanny and gross and weird that you obviously knew it was. Then it started getting to the point where there were like little things, the eyes, the hands, you know, tones and things like that. And then it started getting to the point where you had to really look for clues, right? You're like, okay, I'm looking at this image. What am I seeing here? Like, oh, there it is. There's this one part where like a pixel's out of place or something. Now, you know, there are images where I literally cannot tell. It may be that it's too perfect, right? Like, life doesn't look as perfect as this image does, but even that can be accounted for in many images. So yeah, that's where we're at. But the point I'm trying to make is we've gone from that, you know, that quickly in images, and now it's starting with video. If you look at the file size of a video compared to the file size of an image, it's astronomically different, right? You get into orders of magnitude more storage being used. And the same thing is going to be true of electricity usage in data centers, right? And all of the other elements that go into inference when using AI. So to load a Sora image, for example, is going to be, I don't know, 100 times more intensive than loading an image. And video is just hitting the point where it's skyrocketing, right? It's hitting the point where it's usable. Just this last week, Google came out with their whatever it is. I don't even know the name of it. And I saw some demos on it and people were sharing videos they had made, right, in the early access stuff. And it now includes audio with it. The mouth will move with the words. It will create audio on its own. And while these aren't like, you know, 10-minute, hour-long videos, they're 30 seconds at a time. But even that small of a video is using so much more than a photo or an image. But they're getting good. They're getting really good. We're at that point, you know, when I was talking about in the videos where, or in the photos where you kind of could like see, you know, the hands a little messed up or like the eyes look a little weird or something. We're still there with video. But again, we have gone from something that's just gross and uncanny and weird and like not resembling reality at all, to having to start to kind of strain to see the errors. And in some of these videos, like without the audio or without them moving their mouths, I'm like, yeah, I would not know that that was not a person. If you've seen those dumb videos where someone's out in the streets and they're interviewing like a drunk college girl or whatever, right? And they ask them some inappropriate question. One of these generated videos was of someone doing that. They're asking a question and the girl's answering. With the audio and how it syncs up with her mouth, like, yeah, you can still kind of tell it's a little bit off, a little, but not much. Like, you know, my grandma watching that video would probably have zero clue that it was not real, as would probably a significant portion of the population who's not looking for it, who's not super familiar with AI and, you know, it would pass the average Facebook test, let's put it that way. But yeah, without the audio and video, or without the audio and mouth moving, I would have zero idea. The people look completely normal, the real, the movements, everything looks super real. The people walking in the background, yeah, there's a little bit of awkwardness with that, and that's where you can kind of tell. But anyway, I'm rambling. My point is, we're getting to that point. AI is getting to that point where we're probably, what, 6 months to a year away from being where we are now with images, where it is like pretty much impossible to tell the difference. That means video is going to become one of probably the most used prompts and purposes. Part of the reason it's so difficult right now is because it is so intensive. It's hard on the data centers. It's hard on bandwidth. It's hard on, you know, it costs a lot because you're just pulling so much data and information. By the way, if you know about AI and like you're an AI expert, then you know the way I'm talking about it is I am not, because I don't know. I don't know all of the, you know, the words about AI generation, but I digress. Okay, I spent a lot of time, too much time on this slide. Basically, just to say, we're processing a lot of images right now. We're processing a lot of text, but video is going to be huge. And then what comes after that? You know, as we go from 10-second video snippets to minute-long videos to 20-minute-long videos to an hour-long videos, right, to full movies to streaming nonstop 24/7 AI-generated video, we're talking just astronomically more amounts of everything being used, but in this case, economic impact. Okay, let's go through some of these. We'll go kind of rather quickly. There's just some numbers I want to go over when it comes to, in this case, energy and CO2 emissions. So there's two different things here. There's training an AI model, and then there is inference, which is when you actually use the model. So training is a one-time thing to build the model, to get it to where it needs to be. Inference is every single time you ask it a question, you ask it to generate an image or a video. So for training, GPT-3, which is now a few years old, I believe it was 2022, it used 1,300 megawatt hours to train, which was 120 homes annual usage. So to me, when I saw that number, I was like, 120 homes, like, yeah, that's a lot of energy, but like, if we're building a life-changing, you know, if we can cure cancer with this thing, then like 120 homes is not that much compared to the millions and millions of homes that are out there using energy every day. And I think that that's true. I think it's justifiable at that sort of energy consumption. GPT-4 used 62,000 megawatt hours, roughly 50 times the amount, and 6,000 homes annual usage. So now we're starting to get up there into some numbers that it's like, okay, holy crap, that is a lot of energy. 62,000 megawatt hours, 50 times what it took to go from 3 to 4. Same thing from a CO2 emissions standpoint, 552 tons of CO2 for GPT-3 to 15,000 tons for GPT-4. What's GPT-5 going to be, right? Are we going to 50x again? Are we going to do more than 50x, right? Are we going to do 100 or 1,000x because of the exponentials? I don't know. I have no clue. And we won't know until it comes out, until independent people do their research. But if we're talking orders of magnitude difference each time, like suddenly, yeah, we're having some real impact and issues just from training the models. Where it really comes into play then is with inference, because that's the ongoing expenses, that's the ongoing emissions, the ongoing impact. So a single ChatGPT prompt can expend between 5 and 10 times the energy of a Google search. This is contested. Proponents of AI will say it's less. Independent researchers will say it's this amount. Some people say it's more. But yeah, you know, if I Google how to make a video game, I'm going to get a bunch of results. I can go in and select one. If I ask ChatGPT, hey, how do I make a video game? Again, the answer I'm going to get is so much better, right? It's going to give me a point-by-point bullet list of what to do, where I can start, how much I can expect it to cost, all these different things. And then I can ask follow-up questions. And it makes it so easy and convenient. But in doing so, I am expending 5 to 10 times the energy of just typing it into Google. Image and video generators are much higher than that, in the hundreds or thousands times what a Google search would be. And I mean, obviously, you know, if I Google an image of a butterfly, well, I'm going to get images that other people have taken of butterflies. If I have a video generator do it, or an image generator, then it's one I can use. I can claim is my own. I don't have to give credit to someone else. I can put it on my website. Again, there are advantages, so there are reasons why people do it, but we're talking hundreds to thousands of the amount of energy expenditure. In June 2024, one U.S. utility received applications for 3.5 gigawatts of new AI data centers, enough for 1 in 8 California homes. So sit on that for a minute. That is now we're getting into numbers that are just outrageous. We talked about 6,000 homes annual usage to train GPT-4. Well, now we're talking about 3.5 gigawatts of data centers for ongoing consumption, enough to fuel or give power to 1 in 8 California homes. Wild. There are some efficiency gains, and this is important. When we talk about exponentials and we talk about growth, there is this need and desire, and so there therefore is kind of this technology coming out that will help use less energy, less CO2 emissions per unit, right? So if we have 1,000 times the processing power, we're not necessarily emitting 1,000 times the energy or the CO2 emissions. But so here's an example. Google's new tensor processing units, they're called TPUs, they claim around a 30x performance for only 25% more energy. So they're saying we're going to get 30 times out of this thing than what we're currently getting, and it's going to cost us just 25% energy more. That seems pretty efficient to me, right? But again, we're getting into Jevons' paradox because, of course, if we can become that, you know, if it works that well, only 25% more energy, that's fine. We are most definitely going to be still orders of magnitude above the amount of energy being consumed before, because it's going to be huge, right? If it's replacing every job out there because we're getting 30 times the performance for it, and therefore, like, it's just becoming so prolific that it's being used 10 million times the amount it's being used now, and you multiply that by 25% more energy use, well, you've got your results. Okay, talking about water. Water is used to cool data centers at a rate of 2 liters per kilowatt hour. So you think of a 2 liter, you know, 2 liter thing of root beer or Pepsi or Coke or whatever it is you're drinking, dumped out every single time 1 kilowatt hour is expended in a data center. If U.S. AI power demand reaches 300 terawatts by 2028, which is that tripling we talked about before, cooling alone could require 720 billion gallons of water per year, which is equal to 18 million U.S. homes' indoor water usage. So this is, you know, we're talking about like potable water, and we're going to get to this in a minute. I think it's down below. Oh yeah. As of 2023, 80% of Google's U.S. data center water was drawn from municipal sources, drinking water. So the vast majority of water being used here is water that homes could be using, that gardens could be using, farmers could be using, all these things. It's just, you know, we did an episode on freshwater and how we're already in sort of this freshwater demand. You've got parts of the country who are withdrawing from aquifers. They are running out of water over time. And we're going to exacerbate that by basically building the equivalent of 18 million new homes in the U.S. in the next 3 years just for AI. Multiply that by everywhere in the world and their data center usage. And one thing that's interesting is that I don't have the number here. I did see this research. I wish I would have written it down. Something like it was a very large percentage of data centers are in concentrated areas, and they happen to be in water-intensive areas or water-scarce areas, places like Phoenix and California and things like that. Microsoft's Iowa data center famously used 6% of local municipal water in July 22 while training ChatGPT-4. So it has a local impact, you know, in certain parts of the country. You may not have any issues with the water usage that's happening somewhere else. But for people in those communities, it is a big deal. Hardware and mining. So modern GPUs and TPUs contain numerous critical minerals, things like cobalt, gallium, tantalum, neodymium, and magnets, gold wiring, etc. I forgot a parenthesis on the end there, sorry. But yeah, so we're talking about, these are rare earth minerals. You've probably heard of rare earth minerals and the issues that it causes in many countries in Africa, in China. NVIDIA, AMD, and Intel sold 3.85 million data center GPUs in 2023, whereas in 2022, it was just 2.67, right? So we're talking about a 50% increase year over year in those GPUs being sold. And again, the rate is just going to continue to accelerate. You have issues with things like pollution and child labor. For pollution, we're talking about waste going into streams. We're talking about pollutants being put into the air. Child labor, of course, you've heard about mines in places like the Congo and areas like that, where they use kids to exploit their labor. You send them into the mines where there's toxic fumes. It's dangerous. I just heard a thing today about gold miners being buried, hundreds of them underground. So mining is obviously not a safe occupation, definitely not a safe occupation for children. And it is, of course, not good for the environment. Harvard University says that every ton of rare earths mined produces 2 to 3 tons of chemical waste with high risks to soil and water. We're expending more tons of waste than we are getting material out of the earth. But because they're so valuable and they go into these chips, which cost so much money and is putting soil, water, and people at risk. AI is still a small percentage of all rare earth mineral mining, but the numbers are growing. And I think this is important, and it's something to consider. We talk about all the rare earth issues, and the majority of that is coming from actually renewables and from the defense sector. So things like solar panels, things like wind turbines. I'm not sure about what in the defense sector exactly is using rare earth minerals. I don't know enough about that area, but AI is not the number one usage of rare earth minerals, at least not yet. But the numbers are growing, it is getting worse, and it will become a more and more solid part of rare earth mineral mining and one that will be hard to replace if we ever needed to. Lastly, we have e-waste from rapid obsolescence. We've talked about planned obsolescence in the past, you know, iPhone making a phone that only lasts 2 years so that you're forced to buy another one. This is not planned obsolescence, this is just rapid obsolescence. So servers and GPUs typically last only 3 to 5 years. And it's not because they're breaking. You know, with an iPhone, it slows down, it stops working, it might break. This is because we're too rapidly coming out with more advanced and efficient GPUs and TPUs and whatever it is, right? Quantum computing might be right around the corner, and then, you know, everything is old and out of date, and we have to replace it all. So every 3 to 5 years, we're replacing all of the hardware that's being used. A recent study warns that large language models alone could generate 2.5 million tons of e-waste per year by 2030. Again, this is a small number compared to the amount of general waste that we have, but e-waste is particularly harmful. So we now get into what do we do with this stuff? How do we destroy it? Do we just bury it in a landfill? Do we chuck it in the ocean? Do we send it out into space? What are we doing with it? That was from a study published in Nature Computational Science last October. Total tech waste is expected to grow from 62 million tons to 82 million tons in the next 5 years. So, yeah, we're talking again about like a 30% increase over 5 years. And less than 1% of current rare earth demand is met by recycling. So 99% of rare earth is new stuff that is mined new. Only 1% of it is being recycled, and only 22% of e-waste is even being recycled currently or is recyclable. The rest is all going to landfills. All right. In conclusion, there's some questions that we could ask because there's a lot we don't know. Will growth exceed the projections that we talked about in this episode, or will growth die off, right? Are we in some sort of a bubble? Are we going to hit constraints on energy consumption, on speeds, on storage, on whatever it is? Or are we going to be able to continue to use AI in perpetuity and in an exponential way? How much efficiency can be introduced, right? What technologies may come out that will increase efficiency? It seems unlikely, if not impossible, to ever reverse, right? Be so efficient that we're actually expending less energy than we are now. So that I think that's pretty much out of the question. The question is, how much more energy will be expended? Will there be any regulatory help, right? We talk about, you know, AI dying off because of a bubble, but what if it's just governments coming out and saying, hold on, like, this is not sustainable? And governments have not been very good at that in recent times, right? Any regulatory, especially when it comes to the environment and things like that, is not, you know, it's all reversing right now. Donald Trump is getting rid of all these regulations. This may be different because it has national security implications, right? You know, if the government wants to take AI and only let themselves use it, those types of things, which is scary and dystopian and who knows, but you know, those that could slow down AI use in the public sector. And then what technologies will be introduced that we don't know about yet? And this is both on the efficiency side, but also on the other side, right? We could, you know, maybe it's quantum computing or something, but maybe it's like we figured out how to use AI for text, images, and video generation. What if it's robotics? Robotics is in the works right now, but what if we get really good at robots? And what if we get really good at putting AI in robots? And we replace every manual laborer in the world. That's just, you know, me spitballing. I know that's something that a lot of people are working towards and think that the future is going to be. Well, you know, what does it take to build 1 billion robots? What kind of environmental impact is that going to have? What kind of infrastructure, energy consumption, water, all those types of things? Not even talking about all the other potential dangers of such a scenario, but just in regards to the environmental impact. So there could be a bunch of things like that. Just like the internet, it formed into this thing that maybe wasn't expected. When the internet first came out, as Bo Burnham says, it was a chat room or two, travel blogs, those types of things. But it turned into this landscape that we have now, right? It turned into social media, which I think was never intended or expected. And so AI is in its early days. I think we're just seeing this sort of wild, wild west of everybody, you know, a ton of investment and them saying, what can we make this into? What will this become? And I think over the next decade or two, we're going to find out the answer to that question. And as it matures, I think it's going to be a pretty wild ride. So yeah, time will tell. Thank you for being here for this episode. As always, please feel free to join me on Patreon. I super appreciate my patrons, the support, the help, the ability to talk to each other. We can communicate on Discord. My weekly bonus episodes have not been weekly, admittedly, the last little bit, but I have been trying to at least stay somewhat consistent with releasing those. So anyway, join us there if you feel so inclined. $5 a month, and it goes a long way. Thank you. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.